structuralism implies and says there are truths. There is something that's universal. Post-structuralism says, no, there's not.
These things that I take as self-evident, where did they actually come from?
He looked at thousands of myths and mythos and found universal principles that all these mythos shared.
Actually, I was about to apologize to the French. No.
Whoa.
I'm going to butcher your names, and I don't care. Jacques Derrida.
Whatever. Yeah, no way you were getting that.
Welcome everyone to the Tutor Round Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today, we're talking about post-structuralism. Wait. Don't click off the video.
Click off.
I promise.
Before it's too late.
I promise it's more interesting than you think. In this, on this channel, we've recently got into a little tiff with Barthes.
Hmm. Who's Barthes, Rich?
Dead French philosopher.
Oh. Well, his essay title is The Death of the Author, and we reacted to that. We disagree with The Death of the Author
and
as
so that,
a
that literary sparked criticism. That sparked our main research into like our questions about the broader umbrella that Barthes was under, which was post-structuralism. And so we've looked into it. We want to, rather than this being particularly a lecture to you all that are listening and watching, we are not experts on it. This is mostly a conversation between Austin and I, trying to figure out our own thoughts and our own discussion about it. So let us know what we get wrong in the comments. Let us know what you agree with. And we'd love to be able to learn something, but let's get into it.
Let's do it. This one, we're fascinated by this. And like you said, The Death of the Author was so interesting to read because we had such a reaction to it. It was a fun piece of literary criticism to then be on a podcast and criticize. Because The Death of the Author, for those that don't know, by Roland Barthes, it's, I'll say one sentence thing, we won't be going into that this episode. It'll be more the movement of post-structuralism. But Roland Barthes' essay was about how you don't take in the intent of the author, don't use the intent of the author to decipher meaning in a text. The death of the author, what really matters is the reader. Just simply put, but there's a lot more into it. You can see our whole thing. We'll link it down below if you want to see all of our thoughts and breaking down that essay. But that's what spawned this. And now we're looking at post-structuralism is the movement that Roland Barthes, I don't think he labeled himself that necessarily.
No. So that is something about post-structuralism is not the same as something like communism or capitalism or hell, even structuralists, where this label of post-structuralist is applied to philosophical thinkers as just anyone that has been critical of structuralism. But any of the people that we're talking about really wouldn't pick up the label for themselves as post-structuralist because there's not a universal tie of, there's not a unique criticism to structuralism. All it is, the only thread, you know, connecting thread between these individuals is criticism of structuralism, even if they may be different.
And that's what post-structuralism is. Just dumb it down to, hey, it's critiquing structuralism. So we have to understand what is structuralism to then define post-structuralism, figure out what that is. So what is structuralism, Rich? Let's figure that out.
Sure. Well, structuralism, again, as simple as it can, it is looking for the objective, is questioning the objectivity of words, literary meanings that ultimately through enough study, research, that there is an objective idea that language is trying to work its way toward.
Yeah, little caveat to be structuralism, it's not just language from what I understood, right?
Yeah, that it's basically the idea there is an objective sense that we are all working toward.
Yeah, this can apply to the social sciences, humanities, other stuff, but what we're interested here is language and the linguistics stuff, because there's one of the big, not founders, but one of the big structuralists, his name was, let me make sure I get his name correct, Ferdinand de Saussure. He's one of the principal players here in structuralism. He was a Swiss linguist. We'll get into him a little bit later. But there was several structuralists who were more interested in anthropology, for example. So looking at how culture and marriages work and et cetera. But we are going to bring it more into language and maybe touch on that stuff. Because what you're getting at there is structuralism says there's these universal truths. There's ways to, there's objective meaning somewhere in clarity when it comes to language. There is a way to, there are structures in place. And the way I kind of explain it to myself when reading this stuff is structures predate the human. The structures in universal exist, and then the humans differ and diverge. You know, the river always flows, and then tributaries. What's a river that goes off into multiple directions? The T word. Ah, tributaries.
Tributaries. Okay.
Kind of goes off into different directions, but humans work within these structures.
Yeah.
The structures are there, and then us humans react thus.
Yes. I also did. There's an interesting graphic that Nick, if you don't mind just putting on screen, I'll have it in the folder here for you, that kind of explains an idea behind structuralism when it comes to literature and just language, that there's ultimately two different. So there's our language, which is the word, the pronunciation, the syllables, the writing, whatever have you, that is completely objective. It can be anything. And then there's the idea behind what the word means, and there are different relations to it. So if I say the word lion, well, lion in the meaning behind it is, you know, the animal lion. But that lion could be multiple different things, but there's an object. There is some type of object. There is some objective thing that my word is referring to. And it's about trying to find that. And even though there is variation between language and meaning, there is an objective sense of being referred to something.
Yeah, that is the Saussurean linguistics. So Ferdinand de Saussure, that person I just mentioned, in one of his works, his most famous work, he calls that the signifier and the signified, exactly what you're referring to, where the signifier is the word, what word do you want to use?
Lion.
Lion, okay. The signifier, the word lion, is just the sound we make when we say lion. So the signifier in, let's use cat because I know what cat is in Spanish.
Okay.
I don't know. It's lion león. Is that it?
I think so.
Let's go cat. Okay.
Cat.
So sure. Cat, the word, the sound we make, the k, a, t, that's the signifier. In Spanish, it would be gato, right? Mm-hmm. Gato. It's a different word, but it's the signifier. In Spanish or in English or in any other language, we're all using sounds to say something, and that's the signifier. Then the thing we're signifying, the signified, this thing we are signifying, is the idea of a cat.
Yep.
The thing we're referring to, the object, the thing we're calling, right?
And that is, and then from there, it's, you can only define things by their differences of the idea, and a cat is only something because it's different than a dog, it's different from a tiger, or however many differences. So,
yeah.
But that ultimately is not the full conversation there. I do want to bring up a very interesting idea. It came up briefly when I was looking into it. I thought it was fascinating. Of structuralism itself is ultimately the fulfillment of the Platonic idealism, which is Plato's theory of forms, which is the idea that everything in our reality is but a reflection of a more perfect thing that in the cosmos, ether, altered, whatever have you.
Like you are a reflection of a more perfect Jeff Bezos.
Exactly. Yes.
The true
image is Jeff Bezos.
Yes.
But no, the idea that we all see chairs in our reality, but they are but reflections of a perfect chair, and that's the objective thing.
Mm-hmm.
That everything in our in our mortal realm is just mere reflections of. And so structuralism is the idea of like there is some objective object that we're all trying to refer to and trying to get even closer to. I did find there was an Indian scholar that had a good definition that I thought was interesting about structuralism, is that it's the systematic arrangement where constitute I am terrible pronouncing things. It always goes better in my head.
That's what reading's better. That's,
I know it is.
Reading it in your head is so much head. Easier. Yeah,
I could just recognize a word and know its meaning without having to pronounce it. Anyway, constituent parts interrelate, aiming also to discern the universal principles governing such arrangements. So the idea that there is that the structure itself is a universal principle, that there is an objective sense in trying to treat language as more of an objective science. Anyway,
got it.
That
yeah.
is structuralism, roughly, kind of quickly. There can be more into it, but we are a bit more interested in post-structuralism today.
And for example, a structure, because what are these structures in structuralism? That there's, you know, we're saying what's a signifier signified, that we can kind of get lost in some of the terms. But look at it this way, like the word genres. Genres are a structure that we look through literary lenses of. We recognize patterns in, oh, there's a common theme of sci-fi, science fiction. There's the genre of horror because it has certain elements that speak to some universal truth, a structuralist would say. Or look at the three-act narrative structure of you notice a pattern in stories, such as there's an inciting incident and a midpoint with a false victory or false defeat, and there's a climax, all these things, right? Go read Save the Cat. And then you also have the hero's journey is a common thing that speaks to some structure. These kind of patterns, that a structuralist would look at those things and then say, look at these overlapping patterns throughout different stories, and they will relate that back to some unifying system, some structure that explains that. So, for example, the Ferdinand de Saussure, who might be referring to him a bit today. Let me actually get this right, because hold on, quick type on my computer. No, here's the person. I'm sorry. Levi-Strauss. Levi-Strauss is a name that came up, and sorry, this is the information I have on him, but Levi-Strauss is a big part of structuralism, where he had two things that was interesting as it came up, because there was you know how earlier I mentioned that it's not just language, it's also in the other social sciences, so structuralism go ahead, yeah.
Far more notable of its influence is mostly in history. History and sociology.
Yes.
Those are where you're going to see post-structuralism far more prominent in the studies. Like, literary is relevant, but not as talked about.
Right. And so this guy's name is Claude Levi-Strauss, and he has a kinship theory. This is more anthropology. I just thought it was interesting. Let me know what you think about this. So,
sure.
In his work called The Elementary Structures of Kinship, so Levi-Strauss held this position that the transition from the animal world of nature to the human world of culture was accomplished through the medium of exchange. It was the act of giving that the category of the self in opposition to another, or of one of those group to another group, was actually constituted. Thus, the first social categories originated not in the realm of ideas, but in the exchange of gifts. So to explain that, because that could be a lot, basically his theory was that it came down to exchanging women as gifts and women's fertility. This is his anthropological structuralist way of explaining this. He says, Levi-Strauss says, that because women's fertility is necessary to reproduction, women are the supreme gift you can give in human culture. And so with no fair return for a woman except another woman, they must have been reciprocally exchanged rather than simply given away. So the simplest form of exchange in this schema involved men exchanging sisters. And we're talking long ago, right? Maybe not so long ago, but according to Levi-Strauss, this set up a distinction between those who give wives as wife givers and those who receive wives as wife takers, Essentially, this exchange marriage was developed. And so this anthropological look using a structure, what he explains is there's essentially two structures involved here of why this exists. The first is the principle of reciprocity of you give and then give back. And the second is an incest taboo, where there's this taboo in human culture to where, oh, you can't sleep with your family. So obviously you need to find somebody outside your immediate circle to eventually do the coitus with. Okay.
Yeah.
So, which didn't think we'd get into this in post-structuralism talk, but this is known as the general theory of exchanges, the alliance theory. And I say all this just to explain that structuralism here, to show what Levi-Strauss was saying, he basically gave a whole theory of, hey, how did we go from animals to human culture, and then he brought it back to some structure that could explain this. And his two rules that were there is one, well, there's a structure of incest taboo. And the second thing is there's this principle of reciprocity of human beings, you know, being reciprocal and giving and exchanging. And those two rules are why all the, explain, in his view, why all the different cultures then exist in various forms that base go back to this basic structure that everyone follows. That was his kind of explanation. I thought that was a nice tangent to go, okay, that's why this can be applied in anthropology and the social sciences, which that's pretty much the extent, unless you have more to add on to anthropological stuff, or did you get into any of that when you were researching?
Not too much.
No. Okay. I thought that, so because what we're talking about is more language, that just know that all exists. So it's so everybody listening, there's a whole nother realm here, and the realm we're more interested in, where Levi-Strauss also talked about this. This is where it applies to us, is myth sharing. He talked about how myths can be broken down into myth themes, myth E-M-E-S, like myth themes. And there's these fundamental units which are analyzed in relation to each other to reveal patterns and cultural values. Basically, I didn't look too far into this other than the general point that he looked at thousands of myths and mythos and found universal principles that all these mythos shared. Now, this is me talking, not Strauss, but I imagine it was something of the value of putting God above family. Could be something in mythos or love and deity or something like Oedipus, or take any myth and find a commonality of themes that go back to some human thing. So it's something to do with that, where he found some universal structure pattern that went across all these myths and language and then found something that was a structure there.
Yeah.
So that's, I just wanted to give more context into structuralism and some of the research done there to give the context before Rich. Now we got to now talk structure. Sorry. Now we got to talk post-structuralism.
I'll bring the Britannica definition just where we could start off from, and then there's
lovely
further things to talk about. But in relation to language is not a transparent medium that connects one directly with truth or reality outside it, but rather a structure or code whose parts derive their meaning from their contrast with one another and not from any connection with an outside world. Ultimately, post-structuralism is critiquing the idea of objectivity, that words, definitions, history, everything is based around the context of people's culture, and trying to remove cultural influence and different influences on to different structures. That is the ultimate criticism of it, that good and evil is just depending on what side you're on. A war and the aftermaths and what happened in that war is dependent on, you know, the facts of that. It's just dependent on which side you were on. And that's a lot of this criticism, and especially when it comes to actual language, of trying to find that this word is referring to something outside of the text, to an objective truth. Post-structuralism criticizes that, saying no, that it is not referring to anything objective outside of it. It is only referring, like, it is influenced by its culture and not the objective, like something outside of the text itself, that all there is the text and the influences made upon it. And it doesn't go further than that. Is that clear? Did I do a sufficient job explaining that?
We're going to probably have to say some things multiple times here in different ways. That's how it helped. I don't fully understand it, but that's how it's helping me to understand it too.
Sure.
We say it in enough different ways and it starts to seep in. Yeah. Because for me, could you explain what you're saying at the end there?
Sure. Basically, it's about the connection here, the end of that definition, but that the language is just the parts that derive their meaning from their contrast with one another, not from any connection with an outside world. By outside world, meaning an objective sense. So in doing any kind of look into post-structuralism, you'll see a term there coined, the chain of signification, which is basically, there's another graphic, Nick, if you don't mind popping up. There we go. where building on the idea of structuralism inside language is, you know, the signifier and the signified, that the signified is actually just a, you know, it is influenced by its relation to something else in its culture, and that culture is related to its history and to different, like, just its time period, all of these different things that basically makes this chain of relations and how it's different from one another. And that's, but it always goes backwards. So at least how I like to think of it is, or at least put into my head, the structuralists see language as moving forward toward, like, moving forward or moving up, however you want to think about it, toward an objective, toward a higher truth, that there is something. And that's what the word is, and that the higher truth is actually reaching down outside to give you a mere reflection of it. That, but then post-structuralism takes the opposite approach of the word that you're saying is the, is only the last link in this ever long, ever going chain backwards, that your word is just a, is based on the context of your culture, that is based on the context of your time period, about your socioeconomic class, based on your countries, your location, your everything going back. And so I see as post-structuralism is looking at the word in a backward direction, structuralism is looking at it as a forward direction.
I see what you mean. Yeah, that's a good explanation. I didn't think about it that way when reading about it, but I can see it now. I see what you mean.
It's the denial of a higher objective truth.
Okay. Yeah, and in the case then where, for example, let's take, because by the way, I don't know if we mentioned this so far, but post-structuralism and this movement we're talking about took place in the 1960s and emerged in France in response to structuralism. So it's relatively recent in history, but it's 60s. So 60s and onwards. And the biggest critiques here, you mentioned something that I came across a lot. You mentioned good and evil, like good versus evil, and this binary. So in structuralism, binaries are another kind of structure that's looked at of good and evil. That's one or the other. And then the post-structuralist would look at that and go, well, it's not so simple. It's also who is good, who is evil. It's more, it's depending on the context, depending on,
not even context, but just depending on what side you're on is what good and evil is.
Yes. And then is there's not just a binary. Is there an in-between? You know, the fallacy of dichotomy fallacy, whatever it's called, sorry. But just having two options, is there a third option that this binary is not paying attention to as well?
Yeah.
So
there's also important context within post-structuralism itself.
Yeah.
Is generally associated with mainly the critique of Western culture in general, and is often tied as a critique to Western culture, period. And to be fair, that's a lot of French philosophers are notorious for just being the old rabble rousers that don't like basically order or any type of rule or system or the West in general somehow, even though they're a part of it, whatever. Bunch of rabble rousers is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
But no, that is important context of, like, especially the 60s and, you know, all the protests against war and different, you know, well, who's on the right side of these wars and who are we in the West to be considered ourselves the on the right side of history, all this stuff. So I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition, that many of these post-structuralists actually get their origins and were structuralists themselves in the beginning, which I thought was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and it's not to confuse this with the term postmodernism, right? Where postmodernism, I mean, is
somewhat
different,
related, but not the same.
The way I heard it was that post-structuralism, if there's a tree branch, there's postmodernism on top, and then one of the branches down is post-structuralism. They're not the exact same. The way I understand postmodernism, the best definition I heard is postmodernism is skepticism toward meta-narratives, and that covers a lot of things. So take that aside. We're talking about post-structuralism here. But let's talk about an example. here of what a post-structural critique would be to an example we used earlier from, let's say this example of, do you want to use the anthropology one or the myths one, or come up with a new example? Which one interests you the most?
Let's do the myths one.
Myths one. So a structuralist looking at all these different stories. Actually, we've done this in a video. We had a video where we read Save the Cat, and in the book Save the Cat writes a book. It's basically helps writers on how to write a story. And people will read this Save the Cat, and they'll look at, there's different sections. It explains, hey, what's this react structure?
12, there's 12 types of stories.
Was it 12 or 10? Was it 12?
I believe it's 12.
Okay.
Correct me down below. Tie the 10
number
or 12.
Of stories, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever number of stories it was, it said, hey, all stories fit into these 10 to 12 different story types. So if you're writing a book, just kind of decide what story type are you trying to tell, and then go tell that story. So it seems a structuralist would like that, where it's, hey, stories can be put into these boxes and these universal truths, these structures that exist before the human even begins writing this in the first place. Of we're speaking to this, okay, we're using the structure of this, whatever it is. What would a post-structuralist say to that, of the genres? What would a post-structuralist say to these rules?
Well, the immediate question to it and the critique would be the idea that that is speaking to a universal idea rather than just purely a cultural pattern. That the, say, 10, I think it's 12, but whatever, that there's only 12 types of stories. Well, maybe that is closer to being true in Western storytelling. But when it comes to Eastern storytelling, or, you know, across the world, there's different cultures that have different takes on telling stories, and they're vastly different than those 12 and couldn't fit into those boxes. And so to claim that there are only 12 stories in an objective sense, that this is speaking to a universal truth, seems to be faulty, because it is disregarding the idea that that is only localized to a singular culture.
I did look it up, it was 10 for the story structures.
Plus, thank you.
But then we kind of made the joke of, wait, can't all stories just be categorized into one thing?
Yeah.
Right? How much can you dumb it down? And for example, the 3-act structure we're talking about, there's also in Eastern works, Kitsu Tenkashu, it's called, where it's a different way to structure your story that works culturally more in the East, right? And so, yeah, the post-structuralism will look at those and it will question them and say, I don't know about that. It's more, there's not these fixed meanings. There's not these fixed structures. Rather, there are multiple interpretations. There are multiple ways of viewing this. And that, we should distinguish that from complete relativism. Those are different things.
Yes. Yeah. I do appreciate you mentioning that, because that was, I was looking into it, and when I first started reading into it, I was going like, well, how is this any different from just pure relativism? Mm-hmm. Which, the long and short of it, relativism is, honestly, whether it's real, true, or not, no matter what you believe on it, I find it just kind of pointless. It ultimately leads out to anything could mean anything. There's no actual truth. It just depends on perspective, and then all opinions, all point of views are valid. And it's like, to point, like, why are you bothering to think then? What's the point?
Truth, I knew I don't think.
Yeah, there you go.
But no, this is sound to me. Yeah.
But no, post-structuralism is different from just pure relativism.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an important distinction, that there actually is an idea of it's post-structuralism is more looking at the origins of different structures and questioning the idea of an objective truth, a structure that exists because it is outside of our own creation, rather than just a reflection of our history and culture.
Mm. Yeah. What did you find when you were looking into this stuff that fascinated you most, or you thought before you researched, you had an idea of what post-structuralism was, but it surprised you? Because it seems like that relativism thing, that did you conflate that with post-structuralism at first, but then when you looked into it, it turned out to not be the case?
Well, what I thought was interesting, and it was comparing post-structuralism to Roland Barthes' essay that we read.
Yeah.
Because on a surface level, and this is also a miscommunication or a confusion on the death of the author. When I heard about the idea, and before reading the essay and just being told kind of what it means, I generally agreed of the idea that, you know, the author is not, like, you can't just fully trust what the author says, that the reader's interpretation also matters. It's like, well, that's definitely true. Like, how can you argue against that? That, you know, if a reader has a certain experience with a work, it's like, that's valid. They felt that way. Mm-hmm. And it's either, you know, did the author do a good job or a poor job of explaining their point? And the author can't, like, look down on the reader of like, ah, you just didn't get it. It's like, well, do a better job explaining it then. I don't know. So that idea that a reader's interpretation is can also be valid. It could be a valid look into a piece of work. That's certainly true. But then going deeper into Barthes' essay, I'm like, no, not only one, not only can the author's intentions and author's opinion on their own work be completely discounted, so can most readers' interpretation. It's just whatever can be textually analyzed and proven by, you know, scholars. So forget the history that the author was in. Forget their time period, their culture. Like, throw out everything about the author and what they meant to write, and just look at the words themselves. And some the words themselves have some type of real meaning that can be interpreted.
I'm glad you bring that up.
That is dumb. That's a dumb idea.
Well, here's the thing. You could be interpreting it wrong. And if you are,
yep.
The thing is, with post-structuralism, here's the thing. But then does it prove his point or does it refute his point, right? Where if essays are meant to be understood, isn't that the point of an essay? Shouldn't we try to decipher the meaning of something and find out, okay, what did the author mean? Which, again, this is a subsect of post-structuralism. Post-structuralism isn't the death of the author. Roland Barthes is categorized as a post-structuralist because of the way he views literary criticism, and because this essay isn't the foundation of post-structuralism, essentially.
Barthes is not trying to free the reader of, like, the reader's all that matters. No, it's his actual freedom. It's like, no, readers that just don't understand, they don't matter. It's whatever me and my cool intellectual friends say about a piece of work, that's what really matters. Not the author, not the general reader, just me and my cool friends.
It has to be textually sound. Yeah.
Yeah, which textually sound while discounting the history, time period, and author.
It's dumb. Please go check out our video where we ranted a lot on that.
But post-structural was different. It is more just looking at the culture and history of, hey, what did it mean? Where does the author come from? This word meant a certain thing at that at a certain time.
Well, interesting you brought that up. So Ferdinand de Saussure, who was one of the structuralists and foundational structuralists, this was the Swiss linguist we were talking about before, who came up with the signifier and signified, that entire thing. So in a part of his work, he explains these two terms. The holidays are coming up fast, and it's time to shop, but actually have some fun doing it.
Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else.
On uncommongoods.com, they provide art, games, books, DIY kits, home accents, and all sorts of accessories. What makes them unique is that about half of their assortment is handmade by independent artists and artisans.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. For moms, dads, teens, from book lovers to history buffs, to anyone who hit their quarter-life crisis and started running marathons.
Excuse me. Okay, well, that's my better half, Nicole. She's one of those marathon runners, and I got her a gift from the site. I ordered this custom metal holder for all the races she completes, where there's also a place to put her personal records on there. I'd never seen custom-built case like this before, and so I got her the gift, and it's I'm going to surprise her with it.
Yeah. Hey, every time you purchase something from Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Also, every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods gives $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off of your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/2toramble. That's uncommongoods.com/2toramble for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. First is Synchrony. And the second is Diachrony. Okay, so Synchrony is language in a snapshot of time. And Diachrony is language over time. And Saussure was more interested in understanding the synchrony of words, which is the present structure. So when the structuralist would look at, for example, this sentence I'm saying right now, he would look back in the future 20, 30 years from now and look back to Austin saying this now. And what did my words mean in context in this snapshot of time of what does this mean? That I live in the United States and I'm saying this word because it generally means this and whatever. He would, that's how language would be understood to this structuralist. He would look at a snapshot of time and be like, okay, let's synchrony is the term again. So synchrony, language in a snapshot of time, what does that mean? To you speaking that term.
To give a good example, a word that could mean very different things, just even in our current time, but in different locations, democracy. Democracy coming from an American could mean just, you know, rule by, you know, the people and voting, or it could mean because they're American, do they mean democracy as a democratic republic? Is that what they mean? Because if an American says democracy versus, I don't know, what would be a better
outside? Someone from Athens and Greece.
Yeah, someone from Athens and Greece says it. That word democracy means very different things. Now, if a Frenchman says democracy, what they really mean is just, you know, heads rolling in the streets, complete anarchy and chaos. Whatever ruling class there is must be raised to the ground. That's what the French mean about democracy, but I digress.
Yes. Yeah, even that term can mean different in today's context as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a structuralist would look at it like that. And maybe this would be a bad example to look back to, but I just found the anthropological thing interesting of, remember we're talking about the cloud, let me make sure I get his name right again. Cloud.
I'm going to get none of these names right. They're all in French.
Cloud Lévi-Strauss, okay? Who, remember that whole, he was the one that talked about the mythos having structures and also the exchange and the incest taboo being structures. Now, the post-structuralists could look at that and go, why are you choosing those as your structures? Why is that? So how would you critique that anthropological structural framework of him saying that, well, there's the principle of reciprocity that we have to maintain. And then secondly, there's the incest taboo. And since those are universal structures, therefore, this is how humans went from animal to man, right?
Civilization, yeah. Well, you don't necessarily have to critique those structures themselves because that's post-structuralism is not just about like, oh, there are no structures. It's not necessarily what it is. It's just, why did you pick those as the are those structures universal or are they just contextual? Because post-structuralism does not negate the idea of structures existing. So to bring it to the anthropological of your example of two, like whether it's the incest principle or the principle of reciprocity, all this, that a post-structuralist will say, okay, maybe in certain contexts, in certain cultures, those two are relevant. How do you know that there isn't a third? How do you know that one of those is not, why is that universal? Are there other cultures that seem to have survived and the exceptions to that rule? And maybe those aren't universally true. I think that's the biggest critique is the idea of universal truth.
Mm-hmm.
That is the number one thing they're hammering against, just that conceptual idea.
Where structuralist is saying, hey, these structures exist and me as a human reacts to it. The post-structuralists are saying, we the humans exist.
And we create structures.
Now, I know that's not 1,000% accurate because that there's a little bit more nuance there, but that's how I'm trying to understand it a little bit of, hey, we exist and your basically your biases, your history could make you come up with those structures. So rather than that existing and then you following the structure, what's the difference between, hey, you, which in this case, Claude Levi-Strauss exists in this world. How is your history, your bias, your intentions, everything, how does that not influence the structures you just came up with? It's basically this confirmation bias or this bias of you came up with, who told you those are the structures? Your subjective rational being just invented those structures. Where are those coming from? That's more of what it's getting at.
Yeah. There's also a good term that kind of goes along with this. I was about to apologize to the French. No.
Whoa.
I'm going to butcher your names, and I don't care. Jacques Derrida. Whatever.
Yeah, no way you were getting that.
Yeah, no way I'm getting
Jacques.
That one.
Wouldn't it be Jacques?
Jacques. Whatever. Who cares? They're French. basically, he was in terms of post-structuralism, there is a term he coined of deference. And I know the word is not, he did not coin the word, but deference, when he means it, is meaning is deferred and relies on a network of differences, not a singular essence. That explains just kind of what we were talking about. There isn't a singular thing. It is more based on just differences between historical and cultural contexts.
Mm-hmm.
I did actually have something here. With that, Derrida, whatever. There's a quote that actually often goes around that is often misinterpreted. I don't know if you maybe have seen it when you were researching, but he is quoted here saying, "There is nothing outside the text," which I was reading that and went, oh, that seems very much a, you know, Roland Barthes quote. Mm. Like, that's a, you know, there is nothing outside the text. There is only the text. What he actually meant is something far more complicated of the words in the text are not referring to anything grander than what the author meant. The author said some words and there is no objective thing they're referring to of something grander. It is just, hey, what did the author intend? And what did that word mean during the time the author wrote it and the historical context around it? Hmm. So I did want
to explain that more for me. Yeah.
I have the full quote in context. And again, this is a translation. So
yeah, I did not come across this. Tell me. Yeah.
So want to see what you think about this quote. Mm-hmm. A little long. I apologize. "The writer writes in a language and in a logic whose proper system, laws, and life, his discourse by definition, cannot dominate absolutely. He uses them only by letting himself, after a fashion and up to a point, be governed by the system. And the reading must always aim at a certain relationship unperceived by the writer between what he commands and what he does not command of, the pattern of the language he uses." This is from a work of his called "Of Grammatology." Oh God,
it seems close.
Whatever. Better about thinking of things rather than saying it.
Yeah, who needs a talk on a podcast?
Who needs a talk?
who needs that?
But yeah. Anyway, this is the same. Same body of work also had "There's Nothing Outside the Text."
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically this ethereal truth that the word is referring to something eternally true rather than just true at the time for that author.
Gotcha.
Which I think flies in the face of what Roland Barthes actually said.
About what the author intends.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, interesting.
Basically, he's saying like what actually matters is the author's intentions, the author's history, the author's culture. That's what matters.
Mm.
Not the text itself.
When looking at, so for someone like Barthes, when looking at the text of just being explained by other texts, this kind of infinite loop of words explained by other words endlessly until the end of time. That's how, when interpreting a text, that's how it's viewed, right? As far as if I'm remembering correctly. But question for you then, what are your opinions on structuralism versus post-structuralism? We've been describing what these are. Were you convinced on one way or the other? Do you think it's more complicated than that? Where do you stand?
I mean, in general, I think it's far more constructive to be inside of some type of structuralist framework. There are some things that, through any kind of conversation, there does often have to be some foundational beliefs and some type of foundational structure to talk about things. You know, to have a conversation between two people, often have to have some type of shared language or shared way of communication. When you're debating philosophy, often you have to have some baseline agreement of some things, of good outcomes, bad outcomes, or else you can't argue about the means. So the people that take post-structuralism and go all the way to relativism, I definitely disagree with. And like, I find that almost silly. It's a silly concept to be able to just try and deconstruct every aspect of every culture, of every idea ever. At some point, you gotta just play the cards you dealt and try to figure things out. But if you look at post-structuralism as the idea of just critiquing or asking yourself, where do these fundamental beliefs come from? Where did I, these things that I take as self-evident, where did they actually come from? Fair enough. That's a fair criticism and something interesting to look at. And often many of these structures should be looked at in that context. Now, to go from that point and say like, oh, throw the baby out with the bathwater of like, oh yeah, that structure only exists because of its cultural history here, meaning it shouldn't apply to anywhere and it's ultimately pointless. No, that structure can still be relative. Like, you know, it's still worthwhile. It still can be true, especially for that time and place.
Yeah. So you're saying even though the structure, there could be other structures in place and that doesn't have to be the explanation. It's damn near the best one we have.
Yeah. It goes along with the idea of exceptions to a rule don't disprove the rule. It actually proves it. If someone gives you a rule and you're only finding minor exceptions, it goes on to further explain of like, no, there actually are rules to things. There are always outliers.
So a little different than the scientific method where you find one time it doesn't work, it ruins everything. But this exception doesn't disprove the rule because it's less of... Yeah,
that's even true in science. Almost nothing is 100%. You give a basic idea of like, how many fingers do humans have? Like the human species, how many fingers do they have?
Oh, that wasn't rhetorical?
No.
Oh, 10.
However,
actually,
there are mutations.
Yeah, yeah.
People are born with 9. People are born with none. People are born with 11 and 12. Exceptions actually prove the rule rather than disprove it. Because if every exception disproves the rule, then yeah, we have no rules and there is no structure and then we can't even talk to each other. But anyway, that's the nature of being able to talk about broader subjects rather than specific instances.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring some analogies together of obviously if Newton's dropping the apple and drops it 1,000 times, one time it floats. And you're going, okay, this gravity thing is more complex. Like, I have to change my rule.
I mean, to be fair, that's kind of quantum physics.
Putting your hand through but, you know, there's obviously another rule in place there, right?
Yeah.
So maybe the more accurate way to say it with a rule, there's maybe a more precise rule to create when we're trying to narrow down things, which could be the criticism too.
Which ultimately is structuralism. Structuralism is not implying that the structure that the person is currently talking about is the universal truth. is that it is trying to capture the universal truth, which is the, you know, idea of Plato's theory of forms. There is a perfect chair. The best craftsman in the world creating the perfect chair here on Earth, it'll still only maybe at best be 99% close to the ideal form of the chair. And so it's always this ever marching, like trying to go toward perfection, but never actually reaching it.
Yeah, that does seem to be one big difference among others, but fundamental one of structuralism. Structuralism implies and says there are truths. There is something that's universal. Post-structuralism says, no, there's not. Yeah. That's essentially the
To bring difference. It in relative to our space, yeah. Often you look at genres and the discussion around them of mm-hmm. like, I actually have this conversation with my mother, like our definition of sci-fi is very different as mm-hmm. a genre. My mother sees sci-fi as like, she wouldn't classify Red Rising as sci-fi. Sci-fi to her requires a hard scientific element to it. What we would normally refer to as like a hard sci-fi. That's her definition of sci-fi. But this whole action adventure where the science fiction future is more just a setting rather than a ever-present theme of the story, to her is not sci-fi. But this is just an argument of like, do genres exist? Well, it depends on what the collective agreement is. There are blendings of genres and like, well, this is science fiction and fantasy. Like at a certain point you go, well, there's so many blendings. There's so many differences. There's so many exceptions to the rule. There are no genres. But is that true? Does anyone really think that of just because there's an exception to a genre means that the entire idea of genres doesn't exist?
To bring it back to Saussurean, Ferdinand de Saussure, that structuralist that's been brought up a lot, he talks about the speech community. So again, he's the one that said there's the signifier and signified. If you have the word catch or gatto, it's just our way of making sounds to represent the thing that yeah. we're talking about. Well, he says there's a speech community, and he differentiates these two things, the parole versus the lang. And the parole is you speaking. So your mom saying sci-fi versus you saying sci-fi would be you saying sci-fi, her saying sci-fi, your parole, her parole. Then there's the lang, which is the community. When you both say sci-fi, the community needs to agree upon that term meaning the same thing. Of word, you, when you say the word sci-fi, the ideal you're talking about is the idea you're representing is different than your mom's. And then when your mom says the word sci-fi, the idea in her head that it's not the cat that you're imagining. Like you're imagining a cat, she's imagining a lion, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe you're both imagining cats. Yours is a Persian cat and hers is a black cat or whatever. Like you're almost there. It's close, but it's not the perfect ideal because the language isn't precise enough. It's not talking about the same exact thing, which he does get into of, yeah, you both mean to say something there. But the community word, the lang, is not exactly as what the speech community isn't on the same page for that word, for example. So, that's something I found interesting, too, where this is where it gets back into Roland Barthes and what's the author mean and the intention being the author, because even language itself, look back to when we're babies and we can't speak, we can just say goo goo gaga, all these things, and your first words, democracy is good. And you started screaming, whatever your first words were. But before we could speak and explain ourselves and try to be a part of the speech community, we would just cry or yelp or whatever it would have been. But that yelp, what is that signifying? What do we actually mean by,
Yeah.
Now, does it mean I need milk? Does it mean I need to go to bed, scratch my back? It could mean a whole bunch of things. And the baby said, I'm sure it's going like, get me out of this house. Oh my God, Richard, you're horrible. Your whole situation, whatever's going on, that's what the baby means, possibly, right? But then a parent who doesn't know what their kid's saying, now a lot of parents do, but maybe an uncle's over and doesn't really understand the baby. And Uncle Jesse's great in Full House. Let me make a worse Uncle Jesse, somebody who's not great like Uncle Jesse, goes to see... If you not watched Full House?
No, actually.
What?
I haven't.
Uncle Jesse? Oh, Uncle Jesse. But okay, an uncle comes over to the house, baby's crying, has no idea what to do. He's going back to, well, in Straussian linguistics, the laying the community is just not aligning with the parole of what you're speaking, child, and then freaks out because he doesn't know what to do with the baby. I'm saying all of this to get to the point of how stupid this is of, I love talking about this stuff. We're intellectualizing ourselves into something that we have too much free time.
Yes, that is true.
The post-structuralists and the structuralists all had too much free time to come up with these rules or not rules to whatever this is to just go, hey, when I speak, I'm trying to say something and it doesn't always come across 100%, but I do mean something in my head and we use language to try to cross this barrier that so we're on the same page.
Well, here's a criticism of both structuralists and post-structuralists.
Go for it, yeah.
Both in some way attempting to define and take the words of our take language out of the human connection of like there is some meaning beyond what the author just intended to say, and it feels very anti-human of at least how I've
well,
seen
I hope,
it
I hope is, we're not misunderstanding what do you mean yeah
I hope I'm not being misunderstood, but with a structuralist is trying to look at like there, that word is not just, you know, the word lion isn't just what the author the orator said. It's also referring to this more objective, like there's a thing that outside of the author themselves, this word means this, or referring to a more perfect objective thing. And then the post-structuralist saying, well, no, there is no objective thing. It's just the culture and history of that person that said the word, but that word is actually just, you know, a relational difference of their history and this word and that word and all these things. Like, and ultimately it's like, forget all that. What the hell do the author mean? Like, what is their intention? Lion. They meant, you know, big African savanna cat. That's what they meant.
What does big African savanna cat mean?
You know what it means.
No, I don't.
That's
could you explain
when,
it?
Like,
no, could you please explain? What is that? Like a panther? Big African savanna cat?
Oh, I hate you. But yeah, that is fair. But you can get into those weeds, but it's trying to come across it honestly. You know what I mean? Of like too many people, I think, try to twist people's
words. Can I dumb it down even more for you?
Go ahead.
Instead of saying big African savanna cat, let's say we're over in Africa, there's some lions. I'll point and say, lion. Lion. Until I'll keep pointing, and then you'll point. And this is how we started. Like, okay, when caveman look at rock and go, ooh, rock, 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 rock. And then another caveman goes, rock, rock, rock. We developed rock.
Yeah.
And then
Cavemen came up with the first language of English. It started with rock.
It started with rock, and then eventually the next thing happened. They're like, rock, rock,
English
rock, rock.
Dominance. We are the one culture.
the first language is obviously English, right?
English is the only language that's ever existed. All the other languages are fake.
I wonder what grunts probably. Yeah. But then rock, and then now when I say to you, hey, rock, what do you think of? Rock and roll, of course. Oh, wait a second. Now there's homophones of like, okay, that word could mean multiple things. So now we need to look at context of when I say rock and roll, you're assuming I'm not referring to the stone rolling. Unless I'm saying, look at that rock roll.
So
and then looking
so
down
you say
there.
You lean more towards structuralism than post-structuralism of trying to find an objective meaning.
Say again.
This whole conversation.
Yeah.
Structuralist, post-structuralist. Where do you line up?
If I understood them more, I'd have a for sure answer.
Yeah.
But I think so everything I've said up to like this, my Goo Goo Gaga example and all that is what I think of just how language is practically used. What does that align with more? Probably structuralism, but also not completely because the critiques of post-structuralism are relevant. So it's, I don't know if, again, maybe one day someone would look back and go, like I'm important enough, but if my great-great-grandchild was like, ooh, let me look at these old podcast videos from Tudor Ramble and see what grandpapa thought, and then would label me a structuralist or post-structuralist based on the understanding of those terms. So again, I don't the label, since there's not a structuralist manifesto, it's harder to go, hey, I've read the manifesto and that's exactly what I believe. But I think it aligns more with the first rather than the latter. Although I'm giving myself caveats because I don't want to be misunderstood. The very thing you're asking me is I'm trying to use language in a way that doesn't put me in a space where I don't want to mean the wrong thing. So I don't know.
Michel Foucault. Foucault?
You're doing great. Yeah.
I'm trying my best. You're doing great. I'm doing my best. Anyway, he actually had a quote of like, basically when people try to like pin him down on things he said or like, are you a post-structuralist? All this stuff, he answered about it of like, do not ask who I am and do not ask me to remain the same. Basically, like, you know, yeah, I said that thing then, but don't ask like who I am now. Like, I am always changing. At one point, he was a structuralist. Then he's a post-structuralist. So asking him like, hey, what are you? It's like,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm me. I think different things throughout my life and I can change. Don't try to pin me down to who I am and who I was 5 years ago. So. Kind of relevant to it. So
yeah,
it reminds me of a while ago, before when we started the podcast, you were always you told people and myself and yourself that you were a character first reader.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time realized like, actually, no, I don't think I am. I think I'm a plot first reader. And I remember people's comments of, because, you know, videos are eternal. Our lives go on. Someone watched one of our earlier Red Rising videos,
mm-hmm.
heard you say, yeah, I'm a character first reader, and then watched another video and said, where you said, like, no, I'm a plot first reader, and like, oh, he's lying. He's an idiot. And it's like,
well, the latter's true.
Maybe. But it's like, maybe he just changed his mind or he thought it through. And it's like, ah, I don't think I understand. Like, people are not the same at every point in their own history. They're allowed to change their minds. They're allowed to recontextualize or re-understand something.
That's, again, what we're that term, not the synchronism or synchrony. Synchrony, I believe, was the term that was used there.
Yeah.
But yeah, looking at things in snapshots of time, what did the person mean? Yeah. And history matters, context matters, change matters. That's another big thing, too, of not only does our understanding and context of the term matter, but tastes change. And that's another thing too, because maybe I was a character and maybe it changed over those 2 years, but I think it was the other example of I mislabeled it as characters and it was actually plots of I was confused about what did I actually like about it. Mm-hmm. It's probably more that, but again, you're asking the author of the words that were spoken. So how do my intentions matter? Does it matter? No, not at all.
I mean, that's kind of where, again, I probably lean far more in structuralist. Similar vein to you of like, I value at least some degree of order, and that there is, if we're going to talk about anything, we should try to talk from a place of common ground and common understanding. Mm-hmm. That often requires structure and structures to be agreed upon, even if they aren't universal, which is probably where I maybe disagree with structuralists. Mm-hmm. Is like, and I would agree with the critique of like, hey, is every structure universal, or is it?
It all goes back to incest, of course.
Yeah, exactly. That's the universal truth. Which, hey, you look around the world today, doesn't seem to be a universal truth. But I digress. But no, it's ultimately we get all around like all this complex talk about different words and meanings, and it's like, what did the person mean? Like, someone wrote something. I find trying to take the text outside of the author's mouth and try to think of words outside of themselves and as their own thing is just weird to me. I find that strange. Like, to think of a book as something other than just what that person said. That person said something. That person told a story. and try to think like that book is now outside of time, outside of the author. It is no longer the author's. It's the public's. No, bullshit.
And not every post-structuralist is on this, but that is Roland Barthes. That's his theory. And that's, I think, the thing I'm definitely on the side of. I'm 100% against the essay Roland Barthes wrote.
Yeah,
I completely disagree with the essay. I think the intention of a speaker, of a writer, the person that I look at the same of this conversation we're having versus me writing this down in a book. Words are communication. And whether you communicate in a book form or on a podcast, whatever it is, the intentions of what does a person mean are the most important thing.
Yeah.
That is the critical part of a conversation.
That's the most important thing for any listener to do. If you are communicating with anyone, that should be your primary goal, is to understand the intentions of someone else. If you're just trying to take their words and create your own meaning, you're failing at communication.
And it's very real that the speaker, me, could do a very poor job at explaining myself.
Yeah.
You could be a poor speaker, a poor writer. That's definitely the case.
The reader or the listener can hear something and go, yeah, you may have intended that this way, but it came across this way. And that's valid to say of like, hey, you improperly communicated something, or hey, you communicated something and I don't know, like, you're telling me one thing but you wrote this other thing which is true. There's a conflict here. I understand what you maybe were intending. Maybe you don't even know what you did intend, but that's a conversation to have. But it's still that person. It's still a person speaking, even if they don't understand their own mind. It's still their mind that should be considered, not the words outside of them.
Yeah. And it's why you can say, hey, subjectively, I think this book is good or bad, because when you're reading it, go, okay, I know the author intended this to be a good book.
Yeah.
Which I is bet like, they weren't going in here trying to write a bad book. Now, there's the B movies and examples of the Velocipastor. Lovely movie. Oh, it's great. But where they're intentionally bad as well. And that's what makes them fun, because you know, oh, looked at these gags and whatnot. But yeah, I want to do another Death of the Author video just to strike home how much I disagree with it. It's such a fun thing to talk about, though, because
I just really want to bully our audience.
Mainly, we had a 5-hour discussion, not kidding, 5-hour long recording that's on our Patreon, because we hosted a conversation with them, and most of our patrons, at least that were there, disagree with us. Most people disagree with our take on this, from what I've seen. Now, I'm not, on that video and also getting feedback from people, most disagree, and I still think what I think, and that's why it's even more fascinating to me, because I think we are in the minority of our echo chamber on this, on this opinion. And that's what's interesting to me, because then when we talk to somebody on this, it's like I'm saying the same thing you are. Like, we're preaching at each other, and we've still talked about it for days upon days.
Yeah.
And so when talking with somebody that really disagrees, that's where it gets fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the intentions of both people are, hey, let's find out what is true. Let's conversate and talk to one another. Isn't that a fun idea?
Fucking point.
No, but I mean that, and like that should be a fun thing. Like, we hope that this channel is a place where people can come and then see our awful, our vitriolic book reviews, where we'll give 1 star, 5 stars, everything. We at least mean like, hey, we love enjoying books, but we love talking about books and making bald jokes. That's our entire motto.
That's basically this entire channel is inflammatory statements and bald jokes. That's basically what we do.
So if you want to do more of those, check out our Patreon and link in the description below. And we hope we did post-structuralism some justice of explaining it, talking about it. Let us know what you think down below. We will be interacting in the comments. This will be a very fascinating one to read. So I'll be looking at all the comments, and we'll go from there.
Let us know. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.